on today's Run to the Top podcast.
Whether or not you get shin pain has surprisingly little to do with how hard you pound the ground. You know, the biomechanics and the physics of ground pounding is crazy complicated. There's so much to know. Virtually everything that seems commonsensical about it is wrong.
Welcome to the Run to the Top podcast from Runners Connect, where it's all about learning from the best and most inspiring minds in the sport. Together, we can train a smarter, healthier, and faster running community. Now here's your host, Stephanie K. Atwood.
Welcome. This is Stephanie K. Atwood, Boston Marathon qualifier, coach, and host for the Run to the Top podcast. Today's episode features Paul Ingram, an expert on pain who hosts a website called painscience.com and has been researching pain for many, many years. Paul's encounter with a grizzly bear on an epic hike is directly related to his interest in research into IT band injuries and other sports injuries resulting in major pain. We'll hear his grizzly bear story and much more on pain in just a few moments after a brief break to thank our sponsors. This podcast is brought to you by the newkneeshop.com. Don't let pain keep you from completing your long runs or worse, sideline you altogether. An innovative new product called New Knee can help. New Knee is designed specifically to relieve that dreaded runner's knee pain. Let New Knee help you get back to running without knee pain. Available today at newkneeshop.com. That's newkneeshop.com. Use code RC20 for a 20% discount. Welcome back to Run to the Top podcast. I am Stephanie K. Atwood, your host, and today we are talking with Paul Ingram, the pain science guy. Paul Ingram is a writer and former massage therapist in Vancouver, Canada. He now publishes painscience.com full-time, a popular website about the science of aches and pains and injuries, especially running injuries. He's written books about four running injuries: plantar fasciitis, shin splints, IT band syndrome, and patellofemoral pain syndrome. Although Paul grew up believing in everything from chakras to astral projection, studying sports medicine turned him into a skeptic and a debunker. He is pushing 50 and suffers from serious chronic undiagnosed pain, but he's still a regular at the gym, a runner, and obsessively plays the sport of ultimate. He's also a programmer, a gamer, and a science fiction fan. Paul ran a busy practice in Vancouver for 10 years before leaving due to a storm of regulatory controversy over his writing. That story was finally told publicly for the first time just recently at painscience.com, and we will, of course, learn more. Paul now focuses his full attention on his successful publishing business called painscience.com. Welcome, Paul.
Hi, Stephanie.
Thank you for being here today.
Thank you. From that bio, it sounds like I don't have a lot of spare time.
I think that's probably the case. Thanks for giving me an hour of it.
Oh, happy to do it.
Okay, so let's start with the four basics. How old are you now? Where were you born? Where do you live now? And what is your favorite current running distance?
I am 49, and I was born in Ottawa. And what was number three?
Where do you live now?
Oh, right. Vancouver. 49 years old, born in Ottawa, grew up in Prince George in the bitter cold north of BC.
Wow.
But I've lived for the last 10 years, 18 years, time flies, in Vancouver, famous for the Olympics a few years ago.
Balmy Vancouver.
Yes. Yeah. Despite the frigid temperatures around the continent, we're still relatively warm here in Vancouver right now, but we're breaking records here too. It's -8 this morning in Vancouver, which is crazy.
Oh my gosh. Wow. And what is your current favorite running distance, Paul?
That'd be 3.3 kilometers, which is just a convenient route nearby where I live. That's how far it is to a good stopping point and back. Yeah. So that's the run that I do most often. But it actually suits me well, too. It's just a good length. It's long enough to be worth doing, but not too long for my creaky old bud.
And for your busy days filled with lots of stuff to do.
Yeah, I'm not a distance runner. I keep it pretty short.
Yeah, well, no problem with that. So your website page states, and I'm going to quote this, "The science of aches and pains and injuries is surprisingly weird, controversial, and interesting." And then you say that your job is to understand and translate that science for patients and professionals. You have about 35,000 visitors each day viewing about 1.4 million pages per month. That is really impressive.
Yeah, it's surprising too. I never expected that to happen, but it has slowly but surely over the years. It's a huge audience now.
And you try to make it friendlier. This is part of what you talked about on your About section of your webpage. Make it friendlier than the institutional healthcare sites, but more scholarly and detailed than most health blogs. You emphasize self-help with clear, simple language about complex problems. Does that kind of sum it up?
Yep. That's a good summary.
That's good. Well, it was mostly your words, so
yeah,
they were good. So let's discuss those extremely common running injuries and get some information from you about IT band issues, patellofemoral syndrome, plantar fasciitis, and shin splints. You've written books about all of those, so I know you've got a lot of information.
Yeah, a ton. I've spent a lot of time both experiencing and learning about all of those conditions. You could call them the big four, but it's not quite true. I think probably Achilles tendonitis is as prominent as some of those. So that would be the other really common one, which I have as well. I've experienced myself plantar fasciitis, IT band syndrome, and Achilles tendonitis. Patellofemoral pain syndrome, not so much. Shin splints, not at all. So I have direct personal experience with three of the common running injuries and none with a couple of others.
Let's start with that IT band thing because, you know, I think several years ago, I was looking online for information about IT band as opposed to patellofemoral. There's some similarity, right? I mean, sometimes they might be confused. And I came across this website that had this guy who had gone on a epic hike and ran into a grizzly bear. And when I saw that in this information that you sent me, I thought, oh my gosh, there's no chance that's two different people. That's got to be you. So tell us about IT band and the connection with this grizzly bear.
Yeah, that's me, the grizzly guy. So this is just a fun story. It's made a great story for half my life now. I wasn't a runner for a long time, and my introduction to running was the sport of ultimate. That's the frisbee sport. It's got similar pacing to soccer, so lots of sprinting. And ultimate turned me into a runner, and I was brand new to ultimate. I was doing my massage therapy training in Vernon, British Columbia, and I went for a big hike and got hurt and got IT band syndrome coming down a mountainside. And that affected ultimate and running for the next 2 or 3 years and led to me writing a book about IT band syndrome. So the grizzly running connection is that I got hurt on this hike and had this crazy experience with a grizzly at the same time. I was an idiot. that's how the story starts. I was a complete idiot. I went for a solo hike in the Monashee Mountains, and I had no solo hiking experience whatsoever. Don't do this, people. Don't do this at home. Don't do it in the mountain. Start small. I mean, solo hiking is fine, but just, you know, start small and prepare. Yeah. And for God's sakes, tell someone where you're going. I didn't do that. I didn't start small. I didn't tell my mom where I was going. And the important first part of the story is that at the trailhead, there was a very prominent sign warning about a mama grizzly in the area with her cubs. Mm-hmm. And that made me nervous, but there was a scout troop leader just setting off on a hike on the same hike with a bunch of little girls. And I chatted with him, and he said, "Oh, don't worry about that, Mama Grizzly. She's here every year. Just make plenty of noise. You're going to be going in with us. We'll all make noise. Don't worry about it. It's not a problem." And I, okay, great, great. And we saw no sign of the grizzly going in. Then I went for my hike. I got spooked in the deep forest on my own. It was too early in the season. The trail got snowy. I got mildly lost. It was getting late in the day, and I realized I wasn't going to get where I was going, mm-hmm. and I wasn't even sure I could get back. Mm-hmm. So what I did was, with a too heavy pack, nervous and anxious, I started hauling ass back to the trailhead, going down a steep slope with a 50-60 pound pack. It was way too heavy.
Wow.
And this is a huge risk factor for IT band syndrome. That activity of going downhill under load, this is how many runners get their first case of IT band syndrome. Mm. Not running, but hiking down a mountain. And my knees started to burn within half an hour. I think I had about 2 or 3 hours of going back down. And my knees started to hurt. And after an hour, they were really bad. And after 2 hours, it was a nightmare. But I was still quite a long way from the trailhead. It was about that time, with maybe another hour to go before getting back to the trailhead, sun getting low, twilight, you know, starting to set in, that I remembered the grizzly.
Yeah.
I remembered that there's a mama grizzly with cubs near the trailhead. So I was already nervous. I got a lot more nervous. My knees were so bad. It was hard to keep walking, but I mean, I couldn't stop. I had to get, you know, maybe in retrospect, I should have camped on the trail. I've often wondered, but I didn't. I kept going. So I get back, almost back to the trailhead. Set the scene a little bit here. This is a river valley next to the trailhead. And the river valley is filled with devil's club. That is a wicked, wicked plant that's very common in the interior of the province here. It's hard to overstate how vicious this plant is. Imagine the scariest possible brambles. You couldn't push your way 2 feet through this stuff without getting torn to shreds.
Ew.
And the last 300 yards of trail were basically a tunnel through the Devil's Club, like 6 feet high on either side. So it's just a kind of a surreal, creepy setting. Ew. It's getting dark.
Yeah.
And that's when I heard the grizzly. I could hear her on the trail ahead of me very clearly, huffing, you know, that very distinctive grunting and huffing sound they make. Mm-hmm. And she charged me on the trail. Now, I had bear spray.
Yeah.
And I had a big stick, a big walking stick.
Yeah.
And I had been hollering and yelling, but you know, I think all I did was let her know that I was there so that she could scare me half to death. And she charged me, and I couldn't even see her. I could actually hear her coming.
Oh my
God. Thundering down the trail before I could even see her. It was so dim. And I mean, the speed, it's just mind-boggling. The way I've always described it is, it was like lying at the bottom of a cliff watching a grizzly bear fall on you. It was unthinkable to get my bear spray out. I didn't come anywhere close to getting my bear spray out. Nowhere close.
You must have thought you were dead.
I did. I thought three things. I thought, "Mom, I'm sorry I didn't tell you where I went. And I'm going to die now. This is how it ends." And then the third thought was, I am not kidding you, this is what I thought: at least I won't have to keep walking anymore. My knee pain was so bad. It was like two little nuclear fires on my knees. And I was just like, the idea of being killed was a relief. Put me out of my misery.
What happened next?
Nothing. The thing is, grizzlies are mostly not predatory. Black bears are more predatory. Grizzlies are mainly concerned with scaring you off, especially if they're defending their cubs or food.
Right.
They just want you to piss off.
Right.
And so she did what happens with like 90% of grizzly bear charges is she basically she brushed by me. She veered off at the last possible second, leaving me there, you know, trembling in the path. And she rummaged around in the Devil's Club somehow. Like, this is partly why I told the part about how vicious the Devil's Club is. I couldn't believe the way she moved through it.
Yeah.
It was like, how? Very thick fur and skin, I guess. And she just kind of snorted and breathed around behind me, slowly getting further and further away. And until she was far enough away that I felt safe, staggering back to my car. My knees were so bad, I could barely drive.
Oh my God.
I could barely operate the pedals. I couldn't get down my stairs. I had lived in a three-story walk-up and I couldn't get down the stairs for 3 days. People had to bring me food. And that was the beginning of my IT band syndrome.
Wow. So talk, I'm glad you survived because you've got a lot of useful information to share with us that you wouldn't have had, if you hadn't been here. So tell us this IT band stuff, you know, how could we prevent it? You obviously didn't quite do the right things. And
Don't go down a mountain rapidly with a heavy bag. Yeah.
Thank you.
There's no sure way to prevent it.
Okay.
And this will probably come up again as we discuss other things, but risk factors for running injuries are surprisingly hard to nail down. If you do like that, what happened to me was extreme, unfamiliar loading.
Just overdoing it, right?
Yeah. And overdoing it in an unfamiliar way, overdoing it relative to my preparation. If I had gone, you know, down a mountain with a, you know, a shorter trip down a mountain with a lighter pack, you know, a little longer and a little heavier each week for 6 weeks, I might have been fine.
Right.
But I went too far with way too much weight. And so that was just classic overloading.
Right.
So the number one prevention method is don't do too much too soon. Don't overdo it.
Now, how does body weight fit into that? You know, if you're light versus if you're heavy and you're starting out running, is it more important for someone heavier to be more aware or more cautious?
Yes, but not as much as you might think. Weight is surprisingly, this is a like the first good example of why risk factors are kind of weird. You'd expect weight to be a much clearer predicting factor. It's not actually that strong a factor. The number one factors in whether or not you're going to get an injury running are loading, training load, and inexperience and previous injury. The most, you know, the thing that puts you the most at risk is that you've been hurt before.
Yeah.
And we'll probably again get more into that later, but you know, it's not the posture, it's not the weight, it's not the usual suspects, it's not the your running technique, it's not your shoes or your orthotics. All of these things are surprisingly irrelevant statistically. They are not the smoking gun that that causes people to get hurt. So to prevent running injury, first of all, don't have a previous running injury. That's number one.
That's great.
And don't overdo it. And don't be inexperienced.
So part of it does sound to me like it would be learning a little bit about the nature of running so that you understand the potential injuries. Start cautiously, start easy, and then also be aware of the kinds of things that can go wrong and try to prevent them from ever happening. I know that's easier said than done, but you know, like you're saying, with this overloading and inexperience combination, that's just asking for trouble.
Yeah, sure. And of course, when people are inexperienced is when they're most likely to overdo it because they don't know their own limits. They don't, you know, they don't have experience. So they don't know how easily they might be able to be injured.
So talk a little bit about IT band versus patellofemoral, because I think that was what I was trying to determine is which of those things I was specifically dealing with. This was a while back, and you had written quite a bit of information on it that really helped kind of narrow which one.
It's actually one of the most common things that brings people through my website, is trying to tell the difference between these two conditions. The big one is that patellofemoral pain syndrome is on the front and IT band syndrome is on the side. That's an oversimplification, but basically that's it. IT band syndrome is the more specific condition. We have a clearer idea of what exactly is hurting. Even that is surprisingly still not settled, but it's more narrowed down than with patellofemoral pain syndrome. With patellofemoral pain, there are actually many possible mechanisms for pain. So the pain location and quality can be more variable, which is why the two conditions can be fairly easily confused. If patellofemoral pain is a little more diffuse and a little more to one side, you might mistake it for IT band syndrome. But in general, patellofemoral pain is kneecap pain. And IT band syndrome is pain where the IT band basically just crosses into the knee joint area.
But it also can show up in other places, right? IT band?
Yes and no. Okay. This is a common point of confusion. IT band syndrome is, by definition, knee pain.
Oh, okay.
There are other problems associated with the IT band that often get called IT band syndrome, but it is not at all clear that the IT band is actually the problem in those other cases. So for instance, hip pain is very often thought to be IT band syndrome, but it isn't by definition. IT band syndrome is a knee problem. It is a very, very specifically refers to what goes wrong with the IT band at the knee. Hip pain that may or may not be related to the IT band is another thing. Even if it is related to the IT band, it's hip pain related to the IT band as opposed to IT band syndrome.
Interesting.
That name is more or less reserved for the knee pain.
Oh, okay. Now, how does the sciatic nerve fit into either of these, the IT band or the patellofemoral syndrome?
It doesn't particularly. Okay. The closest would be that there can be some hip pain associated with sciatic nerve irritation or entrapment. So basically, if you have sciatica, you might possibly get misdiagnosed with hip pain related to your IT band. But basically, sciatica is something else. That's another condition.
Let's move on to plantar fasciitis. I know we haven't got all of the remedies or answers for either IT band or patellofemoral syndrome, but let's talk about plantar fasciitis a bit since it's one of the main runner injuries too.
Yeah, it's a big one. Well, I'll start by saying I have this one too. When I got IT band syndrome, it took me about 2-3 years to fully wriggle my way free of it as I studied it and learned about it and worked my way through rehab. It was a really bad case. With plantar fasciitis, I've had it my entire life. It's mild, and I will probably always have it and never be able to get rid of it because it is a relatively rare case of plantar fasciitis that is caused by a mild anatomical deformity. I have a funky foot, and it basically makes me prone to plantar fasciitis. It is a risk factor for plantar fasciitis that most people don't have. You'd never be able to tell looking at me. It's not that weird a foot, but it is a slightly odd positioning of the bones in my foot. So I always have low-grade plantar fasciitis, which is officially, it's irritation of the strap of connective tissue that spans the arch like a bowstring on a bow. However, the fun thing about plantar fasciitis is, like most of these conditions, it's named based on the assumption of what's wrong, and that assumption is probably wrong a significant percentage of the time. So, for instance, a lot of cases of so-called plantar fasciitis probably have nothing to do with the plantar fascia at all. They are probably, the other big one is fatigue of the bone of your heel, calcaneal fatigue. So it's more, that would be more like shin splints, but in your heel. So the bone, believe it or not, fun fact, bone can swell, but it, because it's rigid, it doesn't swell You can't see it getting bigger like a balloon.
Oh, but it gets irritated.
It's irritated, and the porous structure inside of it is swollen, filled with more fluid than it should be, stagnant. Waste metabolites not being transported away as efficiently, it gets really, really uncomfortable. It's extremely rare for that bone to actually stress fracture.
Yeah,
but this is like the prelude to stress fracturing.
Uh-huh.
So, if that's the case, you would never call it plantar fasciitis, because the name plantar fasciitis directly implies irritation of the plantar fascia.
Makes sense. So
there's an argument that plantar fasciitis is misnamed, that it should probably be called heel pain, and leave the diagnosis up to clinicians to try to figure out exactly what the cause of the heel pain is.
Yeah. And sometimes people have pain on the top of their foot too. And I have heard them talk about plantar fasciitis, which makes, doesn't make a lot of sense, but.
Yeah, that would be getting a little, it's too far removed from the plantar fascia to call it plantar fasciitis, but that's just foot pain.
Right.
Getting very general now.
Tendinitis.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And nerve entrapments are another one that often gets mistaken for plantar fasciitis. You can have very plantar fascia-like pain that has nothing to do with the plantar fascia itself, and is in fact caused by a nerve entrapment.
So the challenge for someone trying to figure this out is trying to figure it out. I mean, it sounds like you have spent a long time just looking at the details and figuring out the more specific aspects of it, rather than just kind of generalizing with the name giving somebody a couple of aspirin.
What kind of blew my mind when I was getting started on this, when I first started trying to research IT band syndrome, which was the topic that I cut my teeth on.
Yeah.
I just got really frustrated at how shallow and brief all of the information I could find was. You found the same short descriptions over and over again, repeating the same basic conventional wisdom. And, every now and then you might find a somewhat longer article, but it would basically just be a long version of the simplistic stuff. And I got frustrated. I wanted to know more. So that meant I had to start learning how to read the scientific literature. And it turns out when you deep dive, when you go down that rabbit hole, there's a lot to learn about these conditions that just is not widely.
And who knows it, even to be able to, where would you go as a runner to get some assistance? Well, your website is terrific, really. It's just got so much information, and you have a humorous approach to things and an educational approach to things that makes it fun to read too. I'd like to compliment you on that.
Thank you. If I've managed to make it even a tiny bit fun, success, victory.
Yeah.
This is a hard subject matter to make entertaining, but
pain. But when people are in pain, they've gone to your website in theory.
It doesn't take much. Plus the competition, it's just so easy to be more lighthearted than most of the competition, because other information is so dry. It's not that hard. It's a low bar to clear. But where runners go, that is the problem. I mean, yes, obviously I'd love runners to go to my website, but the more immediate problem for people is, where do I go for healthcare, for appropriate healthcare?
Right, please. Right.
And, I will for sure loud and clear say that good physical therapists, chiropractors, massage therapists, all of them, if they're good at their jobs, the good ones are all great sources. The problem is not everybody is at the top of their class. And honestly, even many of those who were aren't that familiar with the details of the running injuries.
Yeah.
A lot, for example, I'll use myself as a negative example. It's embarrassing how little I knew about any of these conditions when I graduated from my massage therapy training.
Interesting.
Which, for the sake of your listeners, I should clarify, I had unusually substantial massage therapy training. I
right.
For years, this is much more rigorous training requirement here in British Columbia than most places in the world. So plenty of training, didn't really learn anything about these conditions. 99% of what I know about them today, I did not know as a clinician in my first 3 years or my second 3 years or my 10th year, because it was just, you know, I just simply didn't see it enough mm-hmm. and didn't have the time to do mm-hmm. the reading.
Right.
So it is tough. It is flat out tough to find professional help from clinicians who are really up on a particular injury. It's a challenge.
Yeah, unfortunately, it's a challenge. But it does seem to me like coming to your website, taking a look at it, maybe trying to narrow it down or at least identify a few of the pains and maybe some of the names that they're associated with would help to then take to a professional and yeah. ask them how much they know about it or what kind of experience they've had in treating it or, you know, those kinds of things.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, everybody is cynical about Dr. Google these days. And, you know, it's a problem to try to educate yourself online. But it's at the same time, it's often all we've got as a starting point.
Yeah. Well, it's very convenient.
It is possible to educate yourself, and hopefully it's possible to do it well on my website. And if you know a little more about what you're talking about yourself, that makes it a lot easier to shop for good professional help.
Indeed.
You can pretty quickly get a sense of whether or not a particular physical therapist is really prepared to help you.
Now, we haven't gone to shin splints yet, so that's our next major running injury that you see or that you hear about all of the time. So what can you tell us about shin splints?
Sure. So a couple fun things about this one. First of all, it is not one condition. Shin splints is basically, splints is just kind of a weird old-timey name for pain. So it's really, shin splints means shin pain. That's all it means. Splints mm-hmm. doesn't refer to any specific biological phenomenon. And this is another condition that is really multiple conditions in one. You've got shin pain, but why? There are multiple possible mechanisms. Another interesting thing about shin splints is that the biggest assumption that people have is that it's all about the impact. And this is a really fun rabbit hole. We could do a whole separate interview just on this topic.
Really?
About the role of impact and running on pavement versus other surfaces.
Uh-huh.
But the soundbite is it's not nearly as much about impact as you think. that whether or not you get shin pain has surprisingly little to do with how hard you pound the ground.
Wow.
The details of, you know, the biomechanics and the physics of ground pounding is crazy complicated. There's so much to know. Mm. And virtually everything that seems commonsensical about it is wrong. Common sense is pretty terrible in this territory. So that's the other kind of cool thing to know about it is, it's not so much about the pounding.
Well, that's reassuring. But tell us about a couple of different types of shin splints that you know about mm-hmm. and that people might be experiencing.
Yeah, sure. There's cracking your shin bone, cracking your tibia, stress fractures, and bone fatigue and stress fracturing is one major type of shin splints. And I think that's the type that when people think of shin splints, they tend to assume that one.
Mm-hmm.
But then there's also medial tibial stress syndrome, which mm-hmm. is really very closely related. It's almost the same concept, but instead of the bone being the weak link in the chain that goes, that has trouble first, it's the connective tissues attached to the bone. Mm-hmm. There's a bunch of tendon and connective tissue attached to the shin there, and it just gets yarded on like, you know, it's rigging in a storm and eventually gets irritated. You could almost call it a kind of tendonitis, except it's not just one tendon. It's a bunch. It's sort of a mesh or a network of tendons and connective tissue. And so that's another major type. Then there's compartment syndrome, which is swelling in the muscle compartment for the tibialis anterior muscle. That's the meaty part of the shin. And Compartment syndrome comes in two flavors, acute and chronic. Acute is super dangerous. So safety message, public service announcement. If you have escalating shin pain and an acutely tender, meaty part of your shin, go to the hospital. That is nothing to mess around with. That's progressive and potentially very serious.
Really?
So that's rare, though. Uh-huh. Usually it's a more chronic, you know, not steadily developing and worsening.
Right.
That's the swelling type of shin splints. Mm-hmm. And then the final one, and this would be controversial in some people's eyes, so I'll just give a nod to that. But the next possibility is trigger points, those weird little tender spots in muscle tissue that we all get, common as pimples, nastier than pimples in many cases. These things cause, you know, basically they are muscle pain and we don't know why they happen. We don't have a good understanding of what those are. But the most popular idea about them is that they're little tiny micro cramps, little bitty patches of muscle tissue that are misbehaving and getting very tender and grouchy. Mm-hmm. And the shin is a place where this can happen more than other places, especially in runners, and that can be another source of shin splints.
Wow. That's a tough one, shin splints.
A bunch, eh?
Now, actually, here is some therapeutic stuff. You are a very experienced, much practice in massage, and I know you're not doing that professionally anymore, but what are your feelings about massage and using it as an approach to deal with pain?
It's very popular among runners and with myself. I love massage therapy. That's why I went into it as a career. I still get regular massage therapy myself. The medical benefits of massage are a little bit unclear. Mm-hmm. Many people kind of assume that if it feels that great, it must be medically beneficial. Mm-hmm. And a parallel assumption that we all have about stretching. It feels fantastic, therefore it must be doing something useful. Mm-hmm. But attempts to nail down specific medical benefits of massage have been pretty thin on the ground. So, mm-hmm. You know, kind of amazingly little of that and amazingly ambiguous. You know, what studies have been done. So, for instance, the most popular medical use of massage is to attempt to treat back pain. And yet studies, that's where most of the science has been done, trying to determine whether or not people with back pain actually get better. And it's not clear. If it's helping people with back pain, it's not nearly as consistent and reliable as you might think. And so statistically, on average, it comes out as kind of unimpressive.
Interesting. Yeah, that's interesting. But of course, if it makes you feel good as far as being a runner and getting a massage, then that might not be such a bad thing.
Yeah, it's expensive to get professional massage. So that's the sort of major con.
Yeah.
But despite that, I'm happy to get massage, whether it has clear medical benefits or not, because it is, quote unquote, just really pleasurable and relaxing.
Yeah,
that's worth it to me. If that's all I'm getting, I'll take it. It's worth the price, and I can afford that. For a lot of people, maybe not so affordable to do it just for the pleasure.
Gotcha.
So the medical benefits are unclear. Some of them are plausible. A lot of them are just plain old unstudied. We don't know. They've never been given proper scientific tests. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, what study has been done, the results are kind of a little bit damned with faint praise.
Well, thanks for sharing that. And this actually brings me to this controversy that led you to leave your successful massage business. And I wanted to bring this up both because, as I mentioned earlier to you before we started the interview, I interviewed Tim Noakes, Professor and Dr. Tim Noakes, a few interviews back, I can't remember, a few months. But he was kind of, like you, kind of slandered because of writing in a way that the regulatory bodies that regulated his profession felt that it was inappropriate. They ended up suing him. So, you know, in many ways, very similar to your experience. Could you give us just a brief recap of what happened with you?
Yeah, sure. And I'll preface it by saying that this story, I think you mentioned it in the intro, I've told this story just recently on the website sciencebasedmedicine.org with a February 1st publication date. So the more detailed version of this story is available, and it's very fresh and kind of hot right now. It's gotten shared a lot. So a lot of people taking an interest in this. Basically, I quit my career in massage therapy because I got into trouble with my professional regulator for writing critically about pseudoscience in massage therapy and other alternative medicine professions like chiropractic. That upset some people who complained to my regulator, and the regulator is the organization that issues your license to practice, your certification. And they surprisingly took it very seriously and accused me of professional misconduct with very little reference to any specific information. That is, they didn't accuse me of being wrong about anything. They did accuse me of having an excessively sassy tone in my criticism. It's basically they didn't like me. They didn't like my attitude. And there are many people in alternative medicine who have absolutely no interest in the kind of critical analysis that I do. They want no part of it. And so some people in my profession thought that I shouldn't be in my profession.
Well, thank you for sharing that brief version of that, because it's very similar to Dr. Tim Noakes, and he went through a very long and expensive and certainly damaging for his reputation, and was found innocent at the end of it. So, you know, I think there's
a great expense, no doubt.
Much, much expense. And so I appreciate that you took the step you did and said, well, I'm going to keep writing. So I guess I gotta yeah. leave the regulatory body.
I literally quit to protect my right to express myself on these topics. Yeah. And this is an occupational hazard. Just like musculoskeletal medicine is surprisingly weird and interesting and much less straightforward and mechanical than most people think, it's also a lot more controversial than most people realize. You wouldn't believe how upset people get about some of these topics. I mean, it is incredible. And I first realized that, you know, like way back in the early 2000s when I first started writing, I almost instantly, as soon as anything was online, I started getting unhinged hate mail from people who hated me and everything I stood for. And I was flabbergasted by from the beginning, because I wasn't saying anything all that dramatic. You know, mm-hmm. I was basically, all I was doing was saying, yeah, this might not work, might not be all it's cracked up to be, you know, things like that.
Right, right.
And people would just lose their minds over that.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I do hope people take a look at your website, because you use so much science in what you write about, and you reference everything. I mean, it's great. But you also have this lighter and easy flowing kind of writing style that makes it easy and fun to read it.
Great.
I'm a fan. I'm a fan. Now we're going to change here over to, and I'm going to read part, because this is mind over matter, which is big in the running community, especially when dealing with pain. So you had someone write to you saying, and I'm going to quote this part, that thinking of injury only in terms of biomechanics is getting very old school, and that injuries are often stubborn because of a paranoid brain trying to protect us from ourselves by sounding louder alarms than necessary, unquote. So how does this knowledge influence rehab, and is it possible to convince a brain to give a different message?
Yeah, it definitely influences rehab. And this is one of the strangest and deepest rabbit holes in my whole field. So that'd be kind of fun to talk about.
Yeah.
The important thing to understand, you got to start by appreciating that it's more about neurology and metabolic vulnerabilities than most people realize. When we get hurt, it has less to do with wear and tear and mechanics and alignment and posture and gait and running technique, all that stuff, the usual suspects, and more to do with how our brains and nervous systems work and the wet, messy stuff, the moist tissue business. Those vulnerabilities in those departments have as much to do with why injuries become stubborn as any of the relatively simple ways of conceptualizing injury, like I'm using my knee the wrong way. It's always, you know, this kneecap is always tracking too far to the outside. Those kinds of things have been shown again and again and again to be surprisingly poorly correlated with injury. Wow. So I mentioned, for instance, earlier that impact isn't nearly as good a predictor of shin splints as you would think. So that's a good example. People can have amazingly messed up joints and tissues, identifiable problems with tissues, and no pain. And vice versa. People can have a surprising amount of pain and no apparent issue with their tissue. Mm-hmm. So this poor correlation between what's going on with the tissue and the actual pain experience is a really big part of dealing with chronic, stubborn running injuries. The acute ones, the fresh ones, tend to be simpler. Mm-hmm. But chronic pain and acute pain are very different beasts. The longer we are in pain, the more likely it is to be sustained by the brain being basically overprotective. Mm. That more and more and more, it's not so much what's wrong with the tissue, it's how we're reacting. It's how our nervous system is reacting to what's wrong with the tissue. It's a combination of what's wrong with the tissue and how the brain is dealing with it. So it starts to get more and more neurological as it gets more chronic. Mm-hmm. We call that sensitization. So sensitization is a state where you react more to the same stimulus. So the same minor tissue problem might be no problem at all for you, for unsensitized you from a year ago. But now that you're sensitized, that same amount of tissue irritation is giving you a lot more grief. So the sensitized state becomes as much a part of the problem, as much the cause of the pain, as anything that's wrong with your knee or your foot or your shin or your hip.
And how can we resensitize or desensitize our brain?
Right. So that becomes the question then.
Yeah.
And this gets very, it starts to overlap with the question of how psychological is it? Can psychological factors cause pain? Like, could you even have what, you know, seems like a running injury, but really the problem is you need more sleep, or you have low self-esteem or something.
Right.
So I want to get in here before we go any further down that road. I want to be very, very clear that this is not, sensitization does not mean it is all in your head. Mm-hmm. That is not what it means. Mm-hmm. It is a neurological phenomenon that can happen regardless of the psychology. But the psychology is relevant. It does affect sensitization.
Wow.
So there's some crossover, there's some overlap there with the Venn diagram. Mm-hmm. So part of desensitizing is a neurological rehab challenge, and part of desensitizing is also looking at the psychological factors. So let's start with the psychological, dispense with that because there's not that much there. We don't have great mind over matter power. Mm-hmm. And basically the reason for that is that it's our brains and nervous systems that get sensitized, not our minds, not our psychologies. Mind is not boss of brain. Brain will do what brain is gonna do, and our conscious mind has only some influence on that. Mm-hmm. But a sort of classic example of where you get significant overlap between psychological sensitizing factors and a running injury would be things like stress and sleep deprivation. Those things, you know, if you've got emotional issues that are keeping you up at night, literally,
yeah,
that is going to translate into greater sensitization because sleep deprivation is a really clear factor in sensitization. So there's some effect of your state of mind on sensitization via a bunch of different mechanisms like sleep deprivation. But mostly you can't hack sensitization with your mind, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. You can't willpower your way out of sensitization.
How can you get out of sensitization?
Right.
That's a question.
It's more physical than you might think. Mm. And it's really just achieved through experience. You're trying to teach your brain that your knee is actually safe. That it's, yeah, there might be something wrong with it, but it's not that big a deal. Mm-hmm. You're trying to convince your brain to lower the alarm. You can't do it mostly mentally. So how do you do it? Well, you do it through experience. You do it with bog standard sensible rehab. After all this fancy talk, after all of this this hand waving about neurology, yeah, it actually just comes down to the baby steps approach to returning to normal activity. In other words, just standard rehab.
Right.
Athletes and therapists tend to regard this as a process of physical adaptation of changing tissue state. But the more chronic the problem was in the first place, the more likely it was to be about neurology and desensitizing and teaching the central nervous system that it's okay to use that anatomy again.
Wow.
Physical therapist Greg Lehman has a fantastic phrase. I love it. I hope it's, is it all right to swear on this podcast?
Well, let's try it and see if the editor gets rid of it or not.
I'll put it this way. Greg says, rehab is all about calming poop down and then building poop up. He definitely means both the tissue and the neurology.
Uh-huh.
And fortunately, we can work on both of those at the same time. I believe that the biggest problem in rehab, here it comes, people, here's the take-home tip. The biggest thing that most runners that are injured need to learn, we tend to neglect the calm poop down part, which is particularly important when we're sensitized, when we have chronic pain.
Uh-huh.
Basically because we're athletes. We're too eager to build poop up. We're too eager to get to the phase of working back towards normal function and performance. Mm-hmm. So we jump the gun. Our brain is all paranoid. It's like, whoa, the knee, be careful with the knee. And we're thinking the opposite. We're thinking, we got to get out there. I got to get back to my training schedule. So athletes almost invariably neglect the calming part. But if you start with that, yep, if you give adequate rest and then just start gradually exposing your body to more and more load, mm-hmm, you have a nice gradual baby steps approach, your brain will learn, oh, this is okay. And the sensitization goes down. It's just harder than it is with an unsensitized injury, with a fresher injury. So if you're in the first month or two of an injury, nowhere near as hard. Yeah. If you're 8 months or, God forbid, 2 or 3 years, mm-hmm, into one of these injuries and it's become fully chronic, mm-hmm, it is a long slog to teach your brain that much of its distress isn't necessary. But in principle, it's the same. You just slowly but surely convince it with experience.
That is so cool. I mean, thank you so much for sharing that information. That is a really new way of looking at it for me anyway. And I'm guessing our audience might find it pretty darn fascinating too.
I imagine so. I hope so.
Yeah. So we are going to head into the final kick here shortly. Are you ready for the final kick, Paul?
I am ready. I'm ready for the final kick.
Is there any kind of summary that you would like to make before we move into that next phase?
Let me throw in one final point about what I was just saying, because it's interesting, just pure interesting.
Total.
The once burned, twice shy principle. I said earlier that inexperience was a risk factor and that previous injury is a risk factor for running injuries, mm-hmm. which kind of is an interesting dilemma. Beginners get a lot more overuse injuries than experienced runners because load on untrained tissues is a major factor in getting damaged. But once you've been hurt that way, the brain's fear of getting hurt again kicks in and sensitization becomes a factor, so that the second case of an injury probably has a much stronger sensitization factor.
Wow.
It's a trap.
Yeah.
A runner thinks that they've overloaded their tissue again with a second injury, but the chances are good that the load in the second time is much less of a factor. It's still a factor, it's just no longer the major factor. The more you get re-injured, the more this is true. So if you're having your first running injury, it's probably more about overloading. If you're having your fourth, it's probably more about sensitization.
It's time to lock in your 2019 race schedule and lace up your favorite running shoes. Don't let that dreaded runner's knee pain keep you from reaching the finish line this season. Take action with New Knee. New Knee is an innovative new product designed to provide immediate relief of runner's knee symptoms. New Knee is the direct result of engineer and two-time Ironman Mike Emmerling's own five-year struggle with runner's knee. Unable to get relief from other remedies, Mike came up with his own solution. Unlike other knee sleeves and supports that use compression, New Knee's unique design relieves the pressure that each stride places on your kneecap. And the research reveals if you relieve the pressure, you will relieve the pain. New Knee has delivered immediate relief for runners from coast to coast who have struggled with knee pain. It's even been five-star rated by running injury specialist Dr. Ben Shadow. Even Pro Football Hall of Fame running back Thurman Thomas uses New Knee to stay fit and active. That's how effective it is. Founder Mike Emmerling receives weekly rave emails from runners like Aubrey, who said, quote, "I had a big race approaching and was experiencing knee pain during my long runs. I ordered New Knee and it worked great. No pain. I will be using New Knee on all of my long runs," unquote. Don't let knee pain slow you down. Let New Knee help you get back to running without knee pain. You can stop runner's knee in its tracks by going to thenewkneeshop.com. That's New Knee, NewKneeShop.com. Use code RC20 for a 20% discount. Welcome back with Paul Ingram of PainScience.com. Are you ready for the final kick, Paul?
Yes, I am.
All right. Let's start with a favorite local training run in your area, which is what, Vancouver? Are you in Vancouver?
Yeah, I'm in Vancouver, which means I have one of the best runs in the world.
Oh, I think I know what you're going to say. So remind us of the city or town you live in. Tell us where to park, name of starting point, how far, type of terrain, safety issues, bathrooms, you know, the kind of thing that runners would want to find out.
Sure. Okay, let's see. This is downtown Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada, which has the Vancouver Seawall, which is a long, gorgeous run along the ocean side. If you follow the seawall around Vancouver's Stanley Park, a lot of the terrain is quite rugged, big high rock walls on one side of you and a few feet on the other side, the ocean, spectacular views of the mountains, really just an incredible place to run. Stanley Park is huge. I believe it's the The last I heard, I think it's the third largest urban wilderness park.
Wow.
So an undeveloped wilderness park within an urban context. I think Central Park in New York is actually the biggest.
Huh.
And I think Bellingham has the number two. This may have changed since I heard about this. But at any rate, Stanley Park is way up there. It's a big, big park right in downtown Vancouver. But you can run around it on this seawall. So where you would go to start that run, you would park at a beach called Second Beach at the beginning of the seawall around the park. This is on the edge of Stanley Park. So find Second Beach in Stanley Park and start your run from there. And I think it's about... I'm probably wrong about that. I think it's 6K around. Okay. Maybe it's 6 to 9 kilometers, I think.
Is it marked? Are the trails marked?
There's no need for it to be marked because the whole way it's super obvious where you're going. You're just going, you know, you're oceanside almost the entire way.
Nice.
The park is on a peninsula. Mm-hmm. So you run around it and then you just cross the neck to get back to where you started.
Sounds amazing. I actually have run in Stanley Park. It's been years since I ran there, but I remember it, you know, being a great run.
Yeah, it's delightful. I mean, it's hard to imagine a more spectacular setting for a run.
Okay. Second question here, favorite running or running related book. And we have to exclude your own books because you've got bunches of them, but there are other running books out there too.
There are, and there are better ones than mine. Mine are pretty focused and technical. So I'm going to go with a brand new one, which just arrived in my mailbox. In fact, I believe today is when it goes on sale.
Oh.
I have my advance copy here. It's called Good to Go, What the Athlete in All of Us Can Learn from the Strange Science of Recovery. It is by the amazing Christy Ashwanden. Mm-hmm. And the reason I have an advance copy is because she asked for my help in writing some of this book. And we had a bunch of really nice email exchanges. I really enjoyed helping her. I already knew her writing. I was incredibly flattered that she asked me. Mm-hmm. So she sent me a copy of the book, and I believe, I haven't read it yet, so I don't know, but I believe that it is basically the same spirit as my website. It is about the strangeness of the science of rehab and recovery. And I know that she's got a fine mind and has interviewed all kinds of interesting people in addition to me. And I can't wait to dig into this one.
Wow, that sounds great. Good to go.
Good to go.
Good to go. Okay, so we are running out of time. Actually, we are quite a bit running out of time.
We have already run out of time.
Yeah, this has been so interesting. I'm really happy to have had the opportunity to speak with you because I've known about you for a long time. So please do give us contact information and how our audience can find your books actually, and get in touch with you about the many resources you offer.
Sure. It's very easy. Just go to painscience.com. And from there, it's easy to find whatever you might be interested in.
painscience.com. And so we are at the end of our interview. Be sure to follow us at the Runners Connect Winner's Circle on Facebook by going to runnersconnect.net/FB. And please subscribe to Run to the Top podcast at runnersconnect.net or on iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, etc. You'll be notified every week when the new episode is published. Thank you, Paul Ingram from painscience.com.
Thanks so much.
Great having you with us. Hoping that you will keep that feisty, stubborn, and curious scientific attitude about your subject of pain and keep writing the good reads.
Thank you. The feisty attitude isn't likely to go anywhere.
And finally, thank you, our listeners, each of you, for joining us today. We'll be back next week with another great talk to entertain, educate, and inspire you as you head out on your running workout. This is Stephanie K. Atwood, your host with Run to the Top. Have a great day.
Thanks for listening to the Run to the Top podcast from runnersconnect.net.